The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Trumpet Daily radio show. On Friday, I made it to the mic here about 3 seconds before the program began. And Sam was saying he couldn't believe I didn't say anything about that. So here I am, 3 days later, saying something about it. If I seemed out of breath at the top of the show on Friday, that was the reason, because I was sprinting down the stairs to get here just in time, as it turns out. Today I made it here just a little bit earlier, maybe 1 or 2 minutes earlier. So I'm ready to go, and we have a lot to get through. For one, and this is coming up in the second segment, we have a new record, an all-time record to tell you about. So you'll want to make sure that you stay tuned throughout the program, particularly there at the top of the second segment, to get the update on the program that played here in the UK over the weekend. Well, on Friday, speaking of Friday's show, we talked some about the violence in America's cities, using Chicago as the example, and how that in that city, since the beginning of this year, there have been 135 homicides, a huge increase, even over last year, which had alarming figures as well. Chicago's on pace to have 500 or so homicides just this year, 2016. Murders, violence, shootings, all dramatically increasing. There was an article in the New York Times, I believe it was in the Sunday paper yesterday, about the crime spike in St. Louis and how that a lot of it's traced to cheap drugs, cheap heroin, that's being provided by the Mexican cartels. It says in the New York Times, in recent years, Mexican traffickers have inundated the St. Louis area with a new potent form of heroin, drastically reducing prices for the drug and increasing its strength to attract suburban users. So here are the Mexican traffickers just inundating our cities, inundating America's cities with this more potent form of heroin, adding strength to it to attract new users and offering it for next to nothing. It says the dispersal of the cheap heroin has led to a surge in overdoses, addiction, and violence in cities across the country. It's not just St. Louis. It's all of America's big cities. Besides St. Louis, where the problem is particularly acute, Chicago, Baltimore, Milwaukee, and Philadelphia have attributed recent spikes in homicides in part to an increase in the trafficking of low-cost heroin by Mexican cartels working with local gangs. So this article goes on to explain how that for the gangs to be able to sell the illegal drugs so cheap, they need lots and lots of customers. They're offering it at, in some cases, $5 for a day's supply. And so to pay the Mexican cartels back home, they've got to get a lot of new customers. The New York Times says to attract customers, the cartels, usually through a local surrogate, instruct gangs to sell the drug at prices as low as $5 for each button, as they call it. That's about 1/10 of a gram, which can last the novice about a day. It says at times the gangs distribute free samples, according to the agents with the Drug Enforcement Administration. The purity level, this is the New York Times, the purity level of heroin seized by drug agents on the streets of American cities has grown significantly in recent years, federal officials say, rising to 50% from 5% in St. Louis in the past several years, and as high as 90% in Philadelphia. We're talking about strong drugs. It says, in a trend mimicked In large cities nationally, many of the heroin consumers in St. Louis are young whites in their 20s who drive into the city from suburbs and distant rural areas, the police say. And while most heroin overdose victims here are white, nearly all of the shooting victims and suspects in St. Louis this year have been African American men and boys, police data shows. So whites are fueling the demand. But the blacks in the inner cities are the ones that keep getting shot. I wonder what the social justice warriors will do with that figure or with that trend. Well, we talked a little bit about it last week. The president himself, he's letting a lot of the drug traffickers coming from those poor inner cities, he's letting a lot of them go. Because they need a second chance. Something that the more privileged, those coming from the suburbs, something that they evidently have. There was a pretty big summit just last week, by the way, in which President Obama participated. And it was talking, in large part, about this epidemic of drugs and violence that's spreading across America's cities. This first clip I'll play for you, this is the president talking about his own life. He, as you probably know, he had his experiences with drugs, and he explains here in this clip how his life turned out different from many of the friends that he associated with as a youth.
I was lucky. I don't know why. Friends of mine who ended up battling addiction were not less worthy or morally suspect than I was. For whatever reason, things broke that way. But I think Justin's point is correct, which is, regardless of how individuals get into these situations, and we don't know everything. There may end up being genetic components to how susceptible you are to addiction. And addictions may be different for different people. What we do know is that there are steps that can be taken that will help people battle through addiction and get onto the other side. And right now, that's under-resourced.
And so that's what a lot of this discussion was about, was how that we need to fund these treatment programs, treating the effect, basically. And not the cause. And part of that, as we discussed last week, is giving some of these non-violent offenders, as the president calls them, a second chance. This is the second clip from that discussion. This is, again, President Obama last week.
We do know that if you are poor, you're more vulnerable. You don't have the same antibodies to protect yourself. You don't get the same second chances. And so part of the goal, hopefully, coming out of this conference is that because opioids affect everyone, but speak to a broader issue of how do we treat addiction generally, that we as a society as a whole are paying attention to what's going on in our own kids' lives, but we're also paying attention to children who have a lot less resources than you or my children do. Because lo and behold, it turns out that if there's a market for heroin in an inner city in Baltimore, it's not going to take that long before those drugs find their way to a wealthy suburb outside of Baltimore. And I now have kids in high school, and I am well aware that their access to, their ability to access legal or illegal substances is very high. They are just less likely to get in trouble, get thrown in jail, and have a permanent felony record than the kids who live in those inner cities.
So the ones that are rich or coming from the suburbs who get into drugs, they're less likely to get into trouble, get thrown in jail, as he says there, or have this permanent felony record. And so, again, it's paying attention to all the kids, as he said earlier in that clip, but paying special attention to the children who have less resources than his or others that come from perhaps the middle class. And so that's part of making sure that these programs get resourced or funded. It's looking after the poorer ones, and in some cases, in a lot of cases, as we covered last week, giving them a second chance. He talks a lot in that discussion last week about just spending more money on treatment and nothing really to fix the family problems, the family breakdown, and nothing even to stop the drugs from just flowing across the border into the United States. Notice this next clip from the conference.
We are putting enormous resources into drug interdiction. When it comes to heroin that is being shipped in from the South, you know, we are working very aggressively with the Mexican government to prevent an influx of more and more heroin.
He's working aggressively with the Mexican government to try to prevent these potent drugs, this addictive heroin that's killing people by the tens of thousands. He's working with the Mexican government, not using our own government to secure our own borders. Those are wide open, remember. And the drugs just keep streaming in. And the Mexican cartels, they just keep doing their business, working with the gangs on the streets of America's cities. It's amazing how much of all of the solutions put forward by this administration, really any administration, this has been a problem with man, to deal with the effect instead of the cause. The cause, what we're seeing right now play out in America's cities, these are social problems that have been festering for decades, and they're now exploding in our faces. The land is full of bloody crimes, as Ezekiel said. The cities are full of violence. Why? Why is there such a huge appetite for drugs, illegal drugs, hard drugs? And why so much violence? Well, the family has completely broken down in all these prophecies. They should. For students of the Bible, they should come to mind right away. That one in Ezekiel, Hosea, which we've read recently, about God having a controversy with the inhabitants of the land, because there's no truth. There's no knowledge of God in our society. We've rejected God and His authority. We've rejected God's revelation. We've rejected that foundation of all knowledge that is the Holy Bible. That's the dimension in our educational system that's gone missing. And so we see all lying and killing and stealing, as it says there in Hosea 4. And the weight of these rampant sins, it's now coming down on us hard. It's crushing us. As I say, these problems have been festering for decades. Mr. Armstrong talked about those in The Missing Dimension in Sex back in the 1960s. All of these social ills, where it was leading us. He said way back then that this downward moral plunge would end up posing a greater threat to our society than even the hydrogen bomb. Now, we talked about those nuclear bombs that are left unguarded across the continent of Europe, 180, 200 of them, and what a danger that poses for America, for Britain. But as Mr. Armstrong wrote in the 60s, I mean, here is a greater danger. This downward moral plunge. Even more dangerous than the hydrogen bomb. Hosea continued, "My people are destroyed for lack of knowledge." Because you've rejected knowledge, I'll reject you, God says. Seeing you've forgotten the law of God, I'll also forget your children. We produced a program, a TV program, last week on this paradox. This astonishing paradox. I touched on this in one of the radio shows last week as well. But here we've produced all of this awesome knowledge and progress, an explosion of knowledge. And yet we can't solve the most basic problems of our day. And those problems are multiplying, and now they're exploding in our cities. And now you have whites from the suburbs rushing into the inner cities to buy cheap heroin that can easily kill people if they just take a little bit of an overdose. All of these addictions, even amid all this knowledge. Mr. Armstrong said in 1970, all this knowledge, yet virtually no happiness, just accelerating troubles, problems, and evils. It's like being stranded on a raft in mid-ocean. Water everywhere, but not a drop to drink. That's a pretty good description of our society today. It's as if we're surrounded by water, but none of it's water that we can drink. And so we're dying of thirst. Here we are in the midst of oceans of knowledge. And yet we've forgotten the law of God. We've forgotten God's government. We've forgotten that foundation. Well, a few other news items that I just want to roll through. This was a pretty good piece here from The Guardian. And I think especially so because it's written by a lefty. Of course, The Guardian's pretty hard to the left in its overall view. But this is an op-ed piece about Germany's refugee crisis and how it's left Germany bitterly divided, as bitterly divided as Donald Trump's America, The Guardian says. No fan of Trump, I'm sure. But this individual, Konstantin Richter, he says, whatever happens in the coming months, Germany's Willkommen Consulter, that's a German word, a long one at that, so I'll have to defer to our translators to get the proper pronunciation. If you're one of our German-speaking supporters out there, forgive me. But it says, the belief that we should welcome refugees with open arms has arguably come to an end. You remember how it all started last summer. Germans that were there at the train stations to welcome in the refugees, they were cheering for them. Angela Merkel was taking selfies with them. I mean, this was a great event. This was a sign of the times. Progress! Progress! Open arms. Let's take in the problems of this world and actually bring solutions to these many problems. That was the thinking. This individual here says, what's more, the nation that took in more than 1 million people seems irredeemably changed by the experience, and not for the better. Germany is bitterly divided on the refugee question. Neighbors and families are divided. They're divided. I mean, this op-ed writer, to his credit, I mean, he was right on board with trying to help out. He was hosting quite a few refugees in his own house for a night or two, welcoming them in. And then he started to notice some disturbing things from some of these guests, some of the questions that they were asking. The fact that all of them were nearly young men. Young Middle Eastern men that had this to say about Jews or that had this to say about whatever the topic was. It says here, when Merkel said, well managed, she appealed to Germans' pride in their own efficiency. We think we're pretty good at getting things done. We know how to manufacture luxury cars and other complex engineering products. But when it came to handling the refugee crisis, our government institutions turned out to be anything but well-oiled machines. In other words, the problem just got a lot worse. And it talked about how, well, I'll just read it, applications for asylum are being dealt with at a snail's pace, and hundreds of thousands of refugees are languishing in temporary shelters. Last month, the head of the Migration Office admitted that up to 400,000 people had not applied for asylum, which means we have no idea who they are or where they are from. It wasn't supposed to happen like that. It wasn't supposed to be like this. I mean, we're Germany. We're good at getting things done. We're good at manufacturing. We're good at organization and structure. It says the mood started to shift in late 2015, and when hundreds of women were assaulted on New Year's Eve in Cologne, it turned ugly. By then, my wife and I had left Germany for a long trip abroad. Friends told us we'd find the country much changed on our return, and so we did. Germany's a nation with a political culture based on compromise. Suddenly, it felt as divided as Donald Trump's America. People with different views didn't listen to one another anymore. They just hated one another's guts. And then he talks here about how his own personal views changed along the way. Getting the refugee thing right will be Germany's biggest challenge in coming years. And we want to make a contribution, but the spirit of this program, welcoming them all in, taking in people randomly, exuberantly, without getting to know them and establishing a meaningful relationship, it doesn't feel right anymore. It just doesn't feel right to continue with this policy. It just doesn't feel right to continue with this program. And so Germany is divided, like so many other nations in the West. Lots and lots of divisions. There's another story here that our news bureau was able to translate last week about from Die Welt in Germany, a German publication in German, writing about how since 2011, 11 terrorist attacks have been prevented in Germany. In Germany. This is something a lot of commentators have been discussing. In fact, Karl Theodor zu Gutenberg himself, he's talked about how lucky Germany has been so far to not be attacked like Paris, like Brussels. Well, 11 terrorist attacks just in the last 5 years have been prevented on German soil. And so the threat is still there. It's still strong. Germany's divided. Angela Merkel's unpopular. And then how about this story from Die Welt, also translated by our news bureau? It says, this is from last week, 5 years after his plagiarism, 48% of the Germans want to see a return of Karl Theodor zu Gutenberg. 5 years on, is this the time for Gutenberg's comeback? The article says, 5 years after the affair of his doctoral thesis, Karl Theodor zu Gutenberg is almost as popular as he ever was before. Well, who's talked about this? Who talked about it even when he resigned in 2011? Even when the plagiarism scandal first broke, who talked about this potential comeback? Who talked about his popularity? That would be the Trumpet, thetrumpet.com. 5 years ago, and 5 years on from that, here's Die Welt talking about him being as popular as ever before. According to one new poll, the majority of Germans would like to see the former economic and defense minister back in politics. 48% of respondents would welcome Gutenberg's return. That's compared to just 38% who are against it. 48% would welcome it, says the survey. Revealed even more. Accordingly, 36% of the Gutenberg supporters even see him as a chancellor candidate. How about that? 36%. I mean, that's about what Donald Trump pulls in wherever he goes. Now, there's another primary tomorrow, I guess. So we'll see if his struggles from the last couple of weeks hurt him. But even when he was going strong, Donald Trump, he was pulling in 36, 37, 38% of the vote there in those Republican primaries. And here's this poll suggesting that 36% of Gutenberg supporters see him as a candidate for chancellor. And that's pretty amazing. Lots to keep track of, not only in the United States, but of course in Germany as well. Of course, there's lots of headlines in the news still about ISIS and the threat and what's happening in the Middle East, Syria, and Iraq. This piece here from the Jerusalem Post says Libya could replace Syria replace Syria and Iraq as the main Islamic State hub. The JP writes, if attacks on Islamic State continue to weaken the group in Syria and Iraq, it could relocate its headquarters to Libya's northern coastal town of Sirte, its Libyan headquarters since early spring 2015. Well, who prepared Libya for ISIS to take over? That would be the United States. Well, it goes on to quote this professor who's talking about the hits that ISIS is now taking in Syria and how they may have a safe refuge in the Libyan region. There's another piece here about, I guess I won't get into that. We're running through a bit of our time here. But from the National Interest about Saudi Arabia's reply to President Obama's weakness, President Obama really, in a lot of ways, abandoning Saudi Arabia in favor of Iran. And then this other one, again, put forward by our news bureau from Deutsche Wirtschaft from last week about Iran's secret rise to new world power. It says here, the translation does, the Islamic State's running out of money. Turkey needs to bury their dreams of an Ottoman Empire. The Saudis are fighting against oil price decline. The big winner of the ongoing development could be Iran. Tehran has a good chance to be back to a real power in the Middle East. Of course, we would say they're already there. But here are other publications, in this case a German publication, once again talking about what we've been saying for not just a year or two, but really for decades. For decades, that Iran would head up that radical Islamist king of the South. You're listening to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show on KPCG 101.3 on the FM dial in Edmond, Oklahoma. The live stream is available at the trumpet.com website and also kpcg.fm. When we come back, we'll go through some pretty good feedback that we got over the weekend. And if you'd like to contribute to the discussion, send your emails, send your comments to td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. The developed nations have made awesome progress. They have produced a highly mechanized world, providing every luxury, modern convenience, and means of pleasure. Yet they are cursed with crime, violence, injustice, sickness and disease, broken homes and families. At the same time, more than one half the world is living in illiteracy, abject poverty, filth and squalor. Violence and destruction are rapidly multiplying. Many ask, why, if God exists, does He allow so much violence and human suffering? To understand the reason behind this astonishing paradox, request a complimentary copy of Mystery of the Ages. We were born into this 20th century world as it is. We take it for granted, but we can't explain it. It's like viewing a movie at a point already near the end. we see what is occurring at that point. But not having seen it from the beginning, and not knowing how events developed to the point of viewing, we simply cannot understand what we are seeing. Mystery of the Ages transports you back to the beginning of the movie, to the foundation of this present evil world. To learn more, please visit thetrumpet.com. From the Philadelphia Church of God campus in Edstone, England, this is the Trumpet Daily Program with Stephen Flurry.
Well, now we certainly know which TV program that we need to repeat every 4 months here on the stations that play the Key of David UK here in the UK and all across Northern Ireland into Ireland as well. This past weekend, we repeated for the second time. So this is the third time that this program played. The original played in August, at the end of August last year. And then we repeated it in early December. The most important book since the Bible, obviously advertising Mystery of the Ages. And over the course of this weekend, it brought in 266 requests for Mystery of the Ages. And if you've been listening to the program in recent weeks, then you know that 266 is the record, the all-time record that we set. I guess it was just, 3 weeks ago with the program, The Crisis at the Close. So 266, that makes this, we'll surely get a trickle in from that. It could be upwards of 15 or 20 more by the end of this week. So that's going to be well over the new record of 266 requests for literature. So that will make this past weekend the highest requested program ever. The repeat that we ran on December 6th is now the sixth highest ever. And then the original airing of that same program is the seventh highest ever. So three out of the top seven programs that we've played here in the UK are this one video, The Most Important Book Since the Bible, the original airing, and then the two repeats together with it. Three of the top seven. If you total all of them up, that one program has produced 701 requests for Mystery of the Ages. Just one program. You remember the goal that we had last week and all the different programs that we produced advertising Mystery of the Ages. I think there were 10 or 11 of them in total. But here's just one program that we've played three times, and it's brought in 701 requests for the book. So as I say, that's a program that we definitely want to repeat every 3 or 4 months. The weekend before this past weekend, Your Time is Your Life, we picked up an additional 21 requests for the literature offered on that program over the course of last week. That's the program we advertised the last hour, and also the Seven Laws of Success booklet. And so that brings the total for that program to 207. And I mentioned something last week about the fact that whenever there are more Christian living type subjects, a stir to action to actually make changes in your own personal life, typically, not always, but typically those are some of the lower responses that we get. But in any event, we had, 186, I think, over the weekend, last weekend, and then an additional 21 that came in through the week. So that makes that program, Your Time is Your Life, that makes that the eighth highest program yet in terms of requests that have come in. The week before that, this takes us back to March 19th and 20th. Which annual festival should we observe? That, too, is a repeat, in which we advertise pagan holidays or God's holy days. That brought in 175 requests. And then the week before that was until this past weekend, that was the all-time record, The Crisis at the Close. This would be March 12th and March 13th. We advertised He Was Right and the Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse, and that brought in 266 requests. So just to run through the figures, this past weekend, 266, and who knows how many more that will come in the next 6 days. The week before this past weekend, 207. The week before that, 175. And the week before that, 266. That's 4 weekends that have brought in a total request, or rather, the total request for literature over the course of those 4 weeks amounts to 914 requests for literature. 914 requests for these various pieces of literature. The Last Hour, He Was Right, The Four Horsemen, The Seven Laws of Success, Mystery of the Ages. If you take the average, just over the last 4 weeks, it amounts to 228 requests per program. Now, you compare that to the start, and at some point, I guess we'll have to stop going back to this, because the start last year was so small, it's not even really a fair comparison in many ways. We were only on 2 stations then, as opposed to 4 now. But still, when you add them up, those first few programs in January that brought in 29 requests for literature, 37, 24, 23. If you just take January and February last year, the first 8 programs of the year, all totaled, there were 220 requests for literature. I mean, we beat that by a mile just this past weekend. If you take the first 3 months of last year, 13 total programs, the first quarter of 2015, there were 543 requests for literature, and we've gotten almost that many just in the last 2 weeks, just in the last 2 weekends. So some really exciting growth there, and as always, we'll try to keep you posted on what happens over the weekend here in terms of response during those Monday broadcasts here on the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. This email comes in from one of our listeners down in New Zealand. He says he's been meaning to write for some time to talk about the impact on some of the brethren that are so faithful in their support for this work, but who maybe can't go to a Sabbath service regularly due to health or because of distance or because of age. And he writes here, what a wonderful tool it is for them to stay tuned to God's work and on a daily basis. There are a number of seniors in the region where I serve, some in their 70s, 80s, or even 90s, who have the internet and use a computer or tablet and keep up with KPCG. I often show them how to download the various programs. I set up apps for them or show them the direct link to a recorded program on KPCG. One senior lady, 85 years old, in particular springs to mind. She lives remotely and can't get to services. She has the internet and computer and is very proficient in its use. She's 85, keep in mind. She does all the HWA college classes offered online and listens to KPCG. Whenever I visit her, she is sharp and alert. And what is it that she wants to discuss? The work, the latest program, world events, Bible prophecy, the gospel. I come away inspired. She's a wonderful example of someone using technology to help develop God's character in them, despite living alone and a long way from a congregation. I mean, we've talked a lot in recent weeks about just the evils that are spread about through technology. But here's a wonderful example of someone using that technology the right way. He says here, lastly, he has another example of an elderly man, very similar to this lady, who just raves about the programming on KPCG. Lastly, he writes, the many hours of travel gives me the perfect opportunity to listen to the TDR and other KPCG programs. I listen to the podcast, download it onto my iPhone, and then play on the car stereo through Bluetooth. It's so convenient, and it's a great way to redeem the time, he says. It's a great way to take advantage of the time. He says later how he was on the plane once and was going to queue up the TDR on his phone. He put his earphones in and he couldn't hear it. It wasn't loud enough and he thought something was wrong. And he just heard it faintly and and then people are in front of him and behind him and next to him started to kind of glance over at him and what he was doing, and he took the earphones out, wondering what was happening, why it wasn't working well, and discovered that they weren't plugged in right, and so the program was actually blaring off of the speaker of the phone, the introduction to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show, as it turns out. So they got the nice little jingle there at the start about the Trumpet Daily beginning right now. Then he said jokingly that he hoped that maybe they'd go Google it after they heard that first little spiel from the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. So some good feedback there coming from one of our listeners down in New Zealand who works a fair bit with some older seniors who really are faithful in their support of God's work. Seniors who are out there doing their part, excited about God's work, growing in knowledge, in grace, growing in character. There's a lot of our listeners who fall into that category. And we're here to tell you that God has a very special interest in what you're doing. He sure does. It's such a small group of faithful supporters around the world, and so many of the most faithful supporters of this work are advancing in age, up into their 60s, 70s, 80s, even into the 90s. There's a handful even that are over 100. It's very different in God's church than the way it is in this world, where the elderly are really looked down upon, where the seniors really aren't respected and honored the way that they should be. Jeremiah Jacques had a program in my place back in January, I think it was, where he talked about this study last year, this Yale University study, that showed that Alzheimer's disease is more common in nations where there's little or no respect for the elderly. And this study basically concluded that if the society around you thinks that you start to lose it when you get older, then, well, lo and behold, that's actually what people start doing. They start losing it. Now, there's probably other factors that contribute to the high rates of Alzheimer's in the United States and Britain, but still, when you look at the statistics across the board, it's alarming. It's alarming. This Yale study talks about how that if you're in a society where the elderly are well-respected, and if they're living with their extended families or living nearby, then the rate of Alzheimer's disease is so much less than it is in the nations of Britain and the United States. Here in Britain, you're 53 more times likely, 53 times more likely to die of Alzheimer's or dementia than you are if you lived in other nations like Cambodia or India. And again, Mr. Jacques went through this on a program back in early January. 53 times more likely. The United States, it's 100 times more likely. And of course, if you look at our nations today, America and Britain, I mean, we're obsessed with youth and beauty, physical beauty. Then there's really a built-in hostility toward aging in many ways, and you can see it in many of the old folks' homes, as they call them. In so many ways, we abandon our seniors. We abandon the elderly. In this article follow-up to his program, this is something you can find on thetrumpet.com. I forget the actual title that Mr. Jacques used, but he quoted from this book, Social Issues in America. And the author here says, the media in particular emphasize the positive attributes of the young. By contrast, the elderly are generally excluded from the media, except as figures of amusement or ridicule. That's the message coming out from America and Britain. You disrespect the seniors. You dishonor the seniors. They're not important. They don't matter. They're just a joke, a punchline. In another book, Learning to Love, Growing Old, this author writes, "Influenced by the fairy tales we hear as children and what we see on television and hear in everyday life, we develop negative stereotypes about aging. By the time we're 6 years old, these stereotypes persist as we grow up, completely unaware that we even acquired them or granted them our unconditional acceptance. With our understanding of the subject forever frozen, we grow into old age, assuming the stereotypes to be true. And we live down to them. Well, we just assume they're true. And so we live down to them. Of course, when you get old, you get a little bit crazy. You begin to lose it. Now, no one's denying that there are changes that happen as you age. But so many of the changes that we think happen are actually myths. And a lot of it does get down to, as what Jeremiah Jacques covered in the program in January and later wrote about at the Trumpet, a lot of it does get down to the society, the family. If the family is organized and structured the way God arranged for it to be, you can look at one example after another in the Bible and see where the great patriarch is still there. His eyes may be dim. He may be slower than he used to be physically. But his mind is there, sharp as a tack. He's still there guiding and directing. The family and the family all around him honors and praises that hoary head. You go look at the example sometime in 2 Kings 2, where those teenagers came and made fun of Elisha. They laughed at him. They said he was, "Look at your bald head. You don't know anything." And the scriptural account says that Elisha looked back on them and cursed them in the name of God. He cursed them in God's name. And two she-bears came out of the woods and tore apart 42 teenagers. Quite a price to pay for disrespecting a senior who happened to be a great prophet of God. How different it is in the Bible, how different it is in God's church than what is so common in our society today. God's law says to honor your father and your mother, that your days may be long. I mean, all through the Bible, God tells us to honor parents, to honor the elders, the hoary head. These are individuals that should be respected. These are individuals that should be honored. God calls the gray head a crown. The hoary head is a crown in his view. All through the Bible, you see this continually reinforced, this respect for the senior authority, this respect and honor for the seniors. To disrespect them is to dishonor and to disrespect God. "Hearken unto your father that begot you, and despise not your mother when she is old." That's in the book of Proverbs. Let me read to you what Herbert Armstrong had to say. He wrote this article in 1982, which means at the time, he died in 86. Let's see. He died in 86 at the age of 93. So in 1982, he would have been, I guess, 89 years of age. And here's what he wrote. He's talking about a visit. I guess there was a campaign of some sort down in Florida. And so he was driving through the state, driving through a community, driving past a retirement home, as it happens. And he wrote about it like this: "As we drove by, slowly, our attention was arrested by the sight of many retired elderly," quote unquote, probably between the ages of 60 and 70, sitting idly and on front verandas, passing away the time. It was the despondent, beaten look on their faces that caught our attention and filled us with dismay. Plainly, they had nothing to look forward to. They were just tired, uninterested, hopeless. They had a hopeless stare on their faces. He says they were just eking out an existence until finally death would deliver them from endless monotony. And then Mr. Armstrong says here, I had to wonder, why should people believe in a myth that cheats millions out of one of the happiest times of life? Why should the millions believe a myth that makes them old before their time and robs them of usefulness, vigor, sparkling interest in life, and real accomplishment? Why should they fall for this myth? Why should they grow old before their time? Why should they get old and think that, well, life must be over? Well, there certainly are lots of things in our society today that really work against seniors. And it would be easy, like in the example of that email we received from New Zealand, it would be easy if you're 85 and isolated, cut off from brethren supporting God's work, unable to get to weekly services. It would be easy because of the distance, or maybe because your physical family members no longer live nearby, or maybe your life has undergone some dramatic changes. Maybe you don't have the freedoms or the flexibility that you once had to drive or whatever else it is, or health. Health begins to decline, at least in some respects. It doesn't have to the way that it does in our societies because of poor diet and so on. In any event, there's lots of contributing factors to why some could be discouraged or more negative as they get older. But look at the example of that KPCG listener, an 85-year-old senior who faithfully listens to this radio station, who knows her way around using technology, who uses the technology the right way. Let me just conclude again with that comment, if I can find it, from the email that came in. Here is a great example of someone who's become proficient in the use of technology. It says here, she has the internet and the computer and is very proficient in its use. She does all the HWA college classes offered online and listens to KPCG programs. Whenever I visit her, she is sharp and alert. And what is it she wants to discuss? The work, the latest program, world events, and Bible prophecy, the gospel. I come away inspired. This is from a young man who's, well, about my age, much younger than this 85-year-old woman. And he comes away inspired. She's a wonderful example of someone using technology to help develop God's character. A wonderful example. Yes, she is. And there are many others out there who are just like her, faithfully tuning in to these programs day after day, week after week. And the audience size is growing. What a wonderful, wonderful way to use the technology to stay connected, to keep your heart in God's work, and to keep contributing in your support for God's work, whether you're in your teens or whether you're middle-aged and you have small children or whether you're beyond that point, perhaps much, much beyond that point. And you're a senior now, living on your own, isolated and remote, and yet very, very much connected to what God is doing. You're listening to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show on KPCG 101.3 on the FM dial in Edmond, Oklahoma, as we kick off another week of exciting broadcasts here on KPCG. The live stream's available at thetrumpet.com and also the KPCG website. Send us your emails. Keep sending them in, just like that young man from New Zealand. We love it. Send those to td@kpcg.fm. Thank you for joining us today, and we'll see you tomorrow.